Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Matt Youmans of VSiN will join us. We will go over the national title game, UConn and Michigan. What a title game we have. Disappointing just in terms of the entertainment value of the final four games on Saturday, and really when you incorporate the women's, and I'll have some thoughts on the women's title game and all the stuff with Geno and everything in a minute. And I did make an MVP bet, but when you just look at all of the final four games between the men and you throw in the women, there was just not a lot in terms of, you know, exciting moments. It was really disappointing the way Arizona was just embarrassed, and they were ran off the floor, and they were embarrassed Saturday night. Their guards were awful. I know they had the stretch where they cut it to five, and then they missed a few free throws in there where they missed two free throws. They got an offensive rebound and missed a one and one, but that was just a bludgeoning from Michigan, who has done that to a lot of people. And I thought Lloyd, the Arizona coach, who handled himself well after the game, and he's very likable. You know, somebody asked him what happened, and he goes, "Well, Michigan happened." He was very, you know, humble and gave credit to Michigan. I mean, what else are you going to do? But he comes off likable. Seems like a guy that, you know, would be fun to play for, and just comes off like a likable guy. But anyway, he made the point. Michigan is very hard to see them. It's very hard to play them the first time you see them because their size is so unique and their skill and everything they bring to the table that it's hard the first time you get a crack at them to be effective against them. And I forget if he made the point or somebody connected the dots where they actually didn't play that well in conference play. Remember, they did not win the Big Ten title. They had a lot of close games in the Big Ten tournament, you know, Ohio State, and they survived Wisconsin. And they had a little bit of a lull in January where they weren't covering any numbers. They went like seven or eight games where they didn't cover, which makes sense, I guess, that when you look back, the familiarity helps you keep it close and helps you just be more prepared for everything that they bring to the table as opposed to the first time you see them. They're really, really difficult to deal with, and they're really good. And think about what they did to Arizona, and Lindenborg wasn't even involved really in the game. Got two fouls right away. He was hurt. But we have an incredible title game. UConn, I would say, hung on. Pretty much a wire-to-wire win. They were up 18-9. Then they trailed 22-21. They hit a lull, and they had a few lulls in this game against Illinois. But then they quickly had a 5-0 run. They were up four, and they really never got much closer than that. Up eight at half. Every time they were on the verge of blowing out Illinois and making it like an Arizona type of Michigan game where it was just you could turn the TV off with 5 minutes to go. Every time they did that, they got to 12, they got to 14. They would just do something to keep Illinois in the game, but they would do enough when Illinois got close to keep them at arm's length. At 8, there were a couple possessions where UConn just got sloppy with the ball. They forced a turnover, but then they got cute and tried to run a fast break, and they turned it over, and they had a couple of possessions like that at 8 with about three or four minutes to go. That was pretty late in the game. They missed a 1-1 up 8 in the middle of an Illinois run that would have put it to 10. You know, Illinois just kept chipping away, but the closest they got was, I think, 5. It might have been 4 at a point, but it actually was 4 with under a minute left when I think it was Mullins hit the 3 to make it 7. Illinois answered with a 3, but by then you were down to 40 seconds. It became a free throw game. Reed, you know what I like about Reed, and he's a really great college player. He's a tremendous college player. He's not a good free throw shooter, but he makes them when he needs to make them. He made huge ones against Michigan State. He made some important one-and-ones against Illinois, and then he made some important ones, you know, down the stretch. Not only in that final minute, the final 43 seconds, but there was a couple times where the momentum started to feel like it's shifting towards Illinois, and Reed just kept hitting big free throw after big free throw. You know, one-and-ones, those one-and-ones can be very tricky because you miss that front end. It's essentially a turnover, but good job by Reed to hit his free throws. It's a weird game from the officiating standpoint because there were a lot of ticky-tack calls. UConn was in the bonus right away in the second half in the double bonus. Illinois got to the line a million times, but it's amazing. Illinois had so many looks just rim off the rim and close looks, balls that were just not even halfway down, three-quarters, 80% of the way down, spinning, and then they would spin up and just sit on the rim and roll off. It was really bizarre. It was almost kind of like witchcraft or some sort of carnival hoop or something. The ball just wouldn't go through. They shot terribly from three. And it's funny, for all of the comments, and I kind of agreed with it, that, you know what, throw away the first game, Black Friday. It was a long time ago. Rotations were different. There were some injuries. I think there was a lot of truth to that. The first score of the game was 74-61, the score of the first game. The score of the second game was pretty similar, I think 71-62. So almost identical scores, not quite identical, but almost identical scores for a game that we all dismissed. And Hurley after the game, I thought it was pretty amusing, said, boy, we beat this team once by 13 points and we're the underdog. Like, what's up with that? So you know he will feed it to his team these next couple days that, hey, we're the underdog. Everything we've done, we've won national titles, our third chance in 4 years, and we're the underdog. So he's going to play that angle big time. He does have, if you're making a case for UConn, and I like UConn in the game. I don't know how you go against Hurley at this point. It's said it before the Michigan State game, said it before the Duke game, said it before the Illinois game, and I'm not necessarily predicting them to win. I do think they'll fall short, but how do you lay points against him? You're at the point now where even though it's just so simple, it's like the Chiefs and Mahomes, it's so simple to say, oh, it's the Chiefs, it's Mahomes. People don't want to say that, especially, you know, people doing the shows or whatever in the gambling community, because it's not clever, it's not unique, and you feel the need to say something nobody else is saying, so you try to stay away from that, or you pick against UConn. And at some point here, it's not going to be the correct call. Similar to, and I keep pointing this out, the Chiefs-Eagles Super Bowl, where you just keep picking Mahomes. Eventually, picking Mahomes doesn't work. And eventually, picking Hurley's not going to work. Maybe tomorrow's the night. Maybe Monday night is the night. And Michigan does what they did to Arizona, does what they did to everybody else in this tournament. Maybe Michigan does what UConn did to everyone in this tournament for two straight years. But I got to see it first. I think UConn will slow the pace. I think they're going to have to hit some threes. I know Ball's in a walking boot, which... it's interesting because he hurt his foot in the middle of the game, but he was able to finish it. He had a fast break dunk. So I would imagine he goes. I would imagine Lindenberg goes for Michigan. And this is reminding me a little bit. And you guys know I had the Miami to win the college football ticket bet. It's very similar to that because you get to the title game and you think, all right, I can hedge as long as I'm in the title game. And then once you get there, you have an opponent just like Miami was, where you're facing someone. You have an opponent that just blew out their opponent in the semifinal. Indiana did it to Oregon. That look headline went from like 5 to when it opened for real, it was 7, 7.5. I got all the way up to 8.5. Similar thing here. Michigan, UConn was going to be 5.5, maybe 6, 6.5 at the most. They destroy Arizona, and now you're looking at a 7, 7.5 point spread. So I think this is a touch high. I like UConn, and I could see a similar scenario where if you have UConn tickets and you're thinking about how to hedge, do I really want to lay -320 on a money line? No, but then you're stuck with, all right, do I ride it out? Do I hope for a live number? And basketball is a little different than football. It's similar, but you would hope, you would think maybe at some point UConn is up 4 or 5 points. At some point, 6 points. And you know, you got to time this stuff perfectly, which is not always easy. But if you can get up, ideally, let's say 6 points, 8 points, something like that, and all of a sudden that -315 on the money line for Michigan becomes -140 or 160 or in that range, 170, then that hedge becomes much more palatable. If you had UConn futures and you're thinking how to hedge it, I think that's probably the best way to go. Let the game start. Hopefully you get an opportunity, a window where UConn is playing well, UConn has a lead, and then you can make your move and buy back at a cheaper number. And of course, there's going to be those people, though. Hey, if it's 15-7 UConn, now I just want to let it ride. Now I'm up 8. Maybe I can win this thing without a hedge, which there's no right way. There's no wrong way to do this. I guess there's some wrong ways, but it's not as clear cut as this is what you should do. If you were a 7, 7.5 point favorite, like if you had UConn in past years and you're in this title game and you had a middle to go for, it's different. But when you're the 7, 7.5 point dog, it's not as simple in terms of a hedge. But just from the storyline, what a great championship game when you have this dominant Michigan team just destroying everyone in their path, and you have the underdog with UConn with everything they've accomplished the last few years. And UConn in the role of the underdog is just fascinating. And the biggest upset, it's funny, I didn't realize this until I saw the tweet. Katie Sharp had the tweet. The last time we've had a 7-plus point underdog win in the final. So basically last time we had a legitimately decent-sized upset in the title game, Duke-UConn. 1999. So that game's been brought up a lot recently with UConn and Duke playing in the Elite Eight last week and that classic game. But I hadn't realized it had been that long here since we got a big upset in the title game. So I know in college football it had been a while too, and I keep going back to there's a lot of parallels between that Miami-Indiana game and this UConn-Michigan game in terms of the path there, the ability to hedge, the line gets inflated, one team looks unbeatable. Indiana looked vulnerable that night. They won the game. We'll see here if UConn can keep it close, but that would be My bet here is UConn plus the points. Of course, if you have a future or anything like that. And I talked about that future several different times this year. I also counted them out so many different times, a few different times where I just don't see it. I think it was that last loss to Marquette, the final regular season game. Then they got destroyed in the tournament. I said, you know what? I just kind of have to give up on this team. They're just doesn't look like they're going to do it. Doesn't look like they can overcome their many flaws. But, I mean, Hurley's a tremendous coach. They got a break in the Duke game. And they've just been so, so good out of conference. And it really goes back to Calhoun. Even the Kemba Walker year in 2011, they were great out of conference before they got into Big East play. Mediocre in Big East play. I think they might have got 5 or 6 seed that year. I don't remember, but I remember it was nothing special. They got in the Big East tournament, and they won the famous, I think it was 5 games in 5 days to win the Big East tournament. And then they went into the tournament and won the 6 games. So they won 11 in a row in tournament play, and they were great pre-conference play, and they were great post-conference play. They just destroyed everybody that wasn't in the Big East. It was a really bizarre thing, and that happened a few years ago, that first title run where they were a 4 seed, nothing special. They kill everyone in the tournament, and we know the next year they were more dominant in regular season play but destroyed everyone in the tournament again, and here they are. And you can even throw in last year where they beat Oklahoma in the first round and they covered against Florida. But here they are, pretty mediocre conference play, bad against the spread all year, bad against the number. And they are 1 win away from holding up their 3rd trophy in 4 years. Heart of hearts, I don't feel like they're going to get it. But I would love to see it. I would love to see it. I do think they're going to give you a very good effort, a very game effort, and probably fall a little short on Monday night. But I don't think Michigan is just going to run them off the floor like they have everybody else. And I think a little subtle advantage, I remember talking about this last year with Houston and Florida, a little bit of an advantage that UConn got to play first. I know it was an intense game, wasn't an intense game for Michigan against Arizona, and that hurts the case a little bit, unlike last year where Houston and Duke battled to the death. But at least if you're UConn, you know what? You get your guys off their feet. You get them back in the hotel. They can relax. The hour between games, by the way, was the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen. They had the stupid actor playing Naismith. They had the concert. I mean, there's an hour delay between games, which is completely, completely ridiculous. But does that help UConn that they get the extra 3 or 4 hours where you're resting? Hurley, who's just a mastermind, is prepping. Meanwhile, these other teams are playing until, you know, midnight, 11:30 Eastern, whatever the game ended. I don't know. I don't think it can hurt. I think it would be more of an advantage if Michigan and Arizona played a little bit of a closer game and it took a little more out of them physically and emotionally and all of that. But I don't think it hurts. I don't think it hurts. So hopefully we get a classic game. It's a classic in terms of a storyline. The tournament has not been great. I mean, I know back and forth of, oh, the tournament is not what it used to be. And then people say, oh, you guys complain too much about the tournament. It really hasn't been a great tournament. There weren't a ton of upsets. There wasn't a ton of drama in the first 4 days. UConn-Duke was an absolute classic, so we've had our moments. But the Elite Eight, other than that, was pretty forgettable. The Final Four hasn't been great, so maybe we're due for another classic title game here, another classic moment here in the title game. And you know, last year was a good one. Last year was a good one. So I'm not saying we're due for another class or due for a classic title game because last year was a good one. But maybe just the way the flow of the tournament has been here, maybe we get a good one here. Maybe we salvage what's been, for the most part, I know UConn Duke was an absolute classic, but for the most part, been kind of disappointing. But UConn plus the points, I'll be rooting for UConn to hold up the trophy, even though I do think, you know, heart of hearts, Michigan wins the game. The stuff Friday night with Oriyama and Staley, I will just say this. The people, and there were a bunch of people who were very quick to state that Gino was outcoached by Staley on Friday night, which, I mean, I was doing the primetime show, so, I mean, I had the game on, but it's hard to know, and I'm not enough of an X's and O's guy to know, and I don't know if the people making these claims are either. UConn just seemed like they miss a lot of shots. But I noticed a lot of the people that said Gino got outcoached on Friday, not a lot of those people said Dawn Staley got outcoached on Sunday when her team is a favorite, got absolutely embarrassed, lost the game by 30 points, and got run off the floor. So it's funny how that works where they're not afraid to say Gino was outcoached, but nobody will say Dawn Staley was outcoached. It's just interesting, that dynamic. And that's why part of the reason why that sport has a hard time growing. It's just everyone's got their little camps and they choose sides. And If you want to say Gino was out coached, fine. But say a couple days later, Staley was out coached. You got to at least be consistent with it. As far as, and I mentioned I have a Major League Baseball bet. So UCLA wins the championship. Was happy to see them win. Was happy to see South Carolina lose. But as far as the baseball, Yankees have played well. The Orioles, a team I was very high on, and it's still early. Bad start. Bassett's been bad. Still early, like I mentioned. But you know what? You don't want to dig yourself too big of a hole here. And there's nothing that really jumps out on the Monday card as of yet. Lines just starting to pop up. Except Rangers, Mariners, the total under 7.5 with Gilbert and DeGrom. I hate playing full game unders just because I don't want to deal with bullpens. I don't want to deal with extra innings. If you can get like a 4 on the first 5, that might be tough, but it might be a little juice. But I would still play an under 7.5, if anything. That might be one to play. And I bet Ben Rice, 150-1, AL MVP. Hit another home run on Sunday. So I bet this on Saturday. Hit another home run on Sunday. His advanced stuff is really, really good. The hard hit percentage, the barrels, all of this stuff that you look for. You go to the Baseball Savant page. It is a lot of red. It was a lot of red last year. He just hit into bad luck. So I know you got Judge, but hey, at 150-1 with his profile, he's on the Yankees. He's a left-handed hitter in Yankee Stadium. Could Rice have a season where he hits you 40-something home runs? He's in the mix. I don't think that's the craziest thing in the world. So I took a shot at Ben Rice at 150-1. Looking now, the awards are off because the games are underway. But I'm sure when that pops up again here after the games or Monday morning, maybe it moves a little bit because Rice hit a home run. But you're getting triple digits. I think that's a good bet, one to stash away. Small bet, but one that's worth a flyer here. So Rice 150-1 is a play for me for MVP. But coming up, another MVP. Matt Youmans, VEASAN Primetime, will join us. We'll go over the title game, get some Masters picks, talk some baseball. That is next. This should have been more podcast. All right, we are back. Should have been more podcast. You can catch him at VEASAN Primetime, where he is the star, weekdays 7 to 11 Eastern. VEASAN.com. You get all his great write-ups. He's a great college basketball handicapper. Golf, he does all the sports and he does them well. He's Matt Youmans. Matt, what's going on, man? Happy Easter. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, Will. Happy Easter to everyone out there. It's a pretty good Sunday here in Vegas. It's about 88 degrees and sunny. I've been out at the pool today, so I just came in from the pool to talk to you for a while. And I'm watching Dawn Staley get her ass kicked, so this is a pretty good Sunday.
Yeah, all the people saying she outcoached Gina Auriemma on Friday, I wonder if they will be quick to write that she is getting outcoached today, or is it just as simple as playing the result with that? But we'll start on the men's side here. We have a national title game, and I was texting about with you about this on Saturday night. It reminds me, the way Michigan is going into this title game reminds me of how Indiana went into the college football playoff. Similar spreads and everything, where the look-aheads were 4.5, 5, maybe 5.5, 6 at the highest. And then you get a dominant performance against the semifinals, in the semifinals, Indiana against Oregon. And now with Michigan just dismantling Arizona, does it remind you of that? Are there similarities? And what are your general thoughts here with Michigan laying 7.5 to UConn?
Yeah, I think there are some similarities, like we talked about last night. And this number is right where I made it. I was sitting with Derek Stevens at the Circa last night. And about 10 minutes ago in the game, Michigan's up 30. I said, put the line up now. What are you going to make the number? And we were debating 5.5 was the low point, and 7.5 is going to be on the high side. And I think, Derek was hesitant to put the number that high. He said, that's too high. You don't want to give UConn that many points. I said, well, I think you got to put a high because the betting public's going to want to play Michigan off this performance. And like you and I were talking about last night, that was Michigan's peak performance, and now I think they peaked in the betting market. And that's why I feel like, one of many reasons, I feel like it might be a good time to buy on UConn. I felt like it's a good time to buy on UConn throughout most of this tournament. But it also feels like the spot where Michigan just played its A-plus game. And I like to bet against the team the next time out after it plays its A-plus game. Now, if you look at the box score, Will, you would... you'd say, well, it doesn't look so dominant. Aside from the 12 for 27 from three that the Wolverines shot last night, the box score doesn't look that lopsided. You have to take into account that Arizona scored a bunch of garbage points at the end of the game. That was a 30-point game in the second half, right? It ends up final score being 91-73, so the box score doesn't look as lopsided. But I thought there was going to be reactions in the betting market to what happened there last night. You know, we were talking all week about this heavyweight fight, two of the two best teams in the country. And Michigan's up 30 without Yaxel Lindeborg doing a whole lot. You know, he was limping around. He wasn't much of a factor. And Michigan's still up 30. So I think off that peak performance, a lot of times I'll look to bet against a team the next time out. It just happens to be the best coach in recent history in the NCAA tournament as an underdog on the other side.
Yeah, and you're totally right. The final score was not indicative, you know, of how dominant it was. And you can look at it and say Arizona made 12 threes. Arizona only made six threes. Michigan made 12, and that's the difference in the game. But that was an absolute beatdown. A 30-point game was just remarkable. Did you hear Tommy Lloyd's comments after the game? I thought he said something interesting. He said maybe the reason, I'm paraphrasing, maybe the reason Michigan struggled in conference play and they played some closer games is once you played them, maybe – you can play them a little tougher, but the first time you see them, their size is very overwhelming to deal with. Do you take that into account for tomorrow? And on the other side of it, you think Danny Hurley has a plan up his sleeve to counter that?
I think Tommy Lloyd was exactly right in those comments. And in fact, if you look at the two Michigan-Purdue games, you need no better example than that. The first time Purdue played Michigan in West Lafayette, Wolverines ran them off the floor, really. I mean, it was an 11-point game, 91-80. But it was more lopsided than that. The second time, Purdue made a bunch of adjustments and attacked the rim. They got physical, and they took it to Michigan in the paint, and they roughed them up, and the Boilermakers won the rematch by 8. So, yeah, I would say the second time you play them, you make adjustments, and it's easier. So if Michigan played Arizona again, it's probably not going to be the same type of game. That said, I don't think there's any coaching staff who's more prepared for everything that Danny Hurley, Kamani Young, Luke Murray, and the UConn coaching staff. These guys are as good as it gets. I don't think they need two shots at it to get it right. I'm not saying UConn's going to win the game, but I got to take the points at this number. And we'll talk about Solo Ball's injury and the effect on this as well. But look, this is one coaching staff I have full faith in. I imagine you do too.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, at some point here, and I made the comparison, and it's like the Chiefs with Mahomes in the playoffs, where it becomes so square, and anyone can say, well, you don't bet against the Chiefs and Mahomes in the playoffs. You don't bet against Hurley in the tournament. Just because it's that simple doesn't mean it's the wrong analysis. It's something that's just hard to ignore. You win 18 out of 19 in the tournament, you cover 18 out of 19. That's hard to have that be something you just completely dismiss this time of year.
Well, you'd be a fool to dismiss it. And I'm looking at the screen right now. I see, wow, 6.5, 7, 6.5. I was hoping that we would see an 8 pop up again. 7.5 to 8 would pop up again after the Solo Ball report about him being in a walking boot. But I don't see that's the case. You know, I was surprised, Will, at how many people I heard last week touting Illinois. And you and I were both on UConn, and we talked about it on the Friday night show, the VSIN primetime show that we do together. We were both on UConn as the best bet in our contest, and I couldn't understand why so many people liked Illinois. And I'll throw out the first meeting, too, because I know Danny Hurley had some great comments about it. I couldn't understand how we won the first meeting with this team by 13, and we were an underdog in the Final Four, yeah. Which is pretty funny. I love it when coaches talk about stuff like that. But he was right. The first meeting, though, Keaton Wagler was not a factor. It was a different Illinois team. I think this is a different UConn team, too, because they had some injuries early in the season, especially with Terrace Reed. But I've always considered Illinois to be a little bit soft and not too tough defensively. And I was on a show late Friday night, Tom Byrne on Sirius XM. He said, in the Final Four, what's the one matchup advantage one team has over the other? What's the biggest one? I said, I think it's UConn's defense. And the way UConn is going to control the pace of the game against Illinois, they're going to do it with their defense, their experience, their toughness, and obviously their coaching. And I think those are big edges that a lot of people are overlooking this week because they fall in love with the talent. They look at Illinois and the big athletes, the size they got all over the floor, the shooters all over the floor, and people fall in love with the offensive talent. There's a lot more to basketball than that. And I think UConn is proving that to a lot of people the hard way, right? Dan, like I think Hurley made some comments like last night. You might not always enjoy watching us, and sometimes it's ugly, but we get it done. And that's the thing about UConn. I was surprised so many people liked Illinois last week.
I was too, and it's funny because I had the same take where just dismiss the first game. You can't really take much out of it. The teams are different. That being said, it's almost the same exact final score. I think one was 74-61 the first time around. Then it was 71-62 the second time around. So as much as we all said dismiss it, it ended up being the final score. What do you make of the injuries? Lindenberg on the Michigan side, Ball on the UConn side. Do they cancel out? Is it, you know what, it's the title game. They're both going to play. You kind of ignore it. What's your take here on both these guys that are banged up?
I was stunned, and you probably were too, and I'm sure a lot of people were, that Michigan was that good Saturday night without Yaxel Lindenborg doing a lot. I mean, you look up and they're up by 27 points, and he hasn't been much of a factor in the game, and you're saying, what the hell is happening here? And I read stories with comments from both players before you and I started this podcast today. I think they're both going to be out there, and they're both going to be fine. I know Solo Ball's got a foot sprain. He was key in that game against Illinois, 3-for-7 from three. They need contributions from him. He was one of the best three-point shooters in the nation the previous season, has slumped this year. But I thought he might step up in his Final Four. He did step up against Illinois. Hurley said he was surprised. He didn't even know Ball had a foot injury until he saw him in the boot, and then they told him. Based on Ball's comments, I think he's going to be out there. He's going to be okay. You remember that breakaway dunk he had last night? That was after he suffered the sprained foot. So I know you're playing on adrenaline, and, you know, when you sleep on it, you wake up the next day, it's sore and things like that. But I think by Monday night, he's going to be okay. I read the Yaxel Lindenborg's comments, too. I think he's going to be fine and good to go. So I'm really not going to factor these injuries into the handicap much at all. How about you?
Nope, I would tend to agree with it. I think they'll be fine. They'll both be good to go. They'll rest. They'll do whatever they have to do to get ready here. Do you take anything? Do you have any interest in the total here at 144?
No, I don't. Actually, it's funny. We were out there at Circa last night, and there was a guy who bet $300,000 on Michigan. And he's a real understated pro bettor. He didn't want people even to know his name, and he's not out searching for publicity, but he fired big, and he fires big in a lot of college hoops games. And he asked me, what's your projection for Michigan-UConn? And before the line, the total was out, I said, I think it's a 74-70 type of game. I think Michigan's going to win, but it's going to be a little bit more of a grinder. We'll talk about a team, Will, that scored 90 points or more in all five tournament games, but UConn's going to slow the pace down in this one. And it's going to be more of a grind. So I said 74-70 before we even saw the total of 144.5, whatever, come out. And I have to admit, I'm a crappy totals better, or I have crappy luck with totals, too. I had both sides right yesterday, and I got the total wrong. I liked the under in the Arizona-Michigan game. I liked under 157.5, and it flies over. So I've been really good on sides in the last few rounds of this tournament, and I have not been able to get the totals right. Now I feel like there's a little bit more of a random effect with the totals too, because of the free throws, and you don't know how many free throws you're going to get at the end of these games. And I'm probably going to have to pass on the total. What are your thoughts?
On one hand, usually you lean towards the under in these title games. They tend to be slower, closer to the vest. Teams come out a little tight. On the other hand, you really want to sit there with an under ticket on Michigan, because Michigan just plays so fast. I do think if you like Michigan, you probably like the over, and vice versa. If you like UConn, you like the under. Because I think if you're UConn, slow it down, use the shot clock, shoot a bunch of threes. I think that's their game plan, where Michigan probably wants to run and push the pace. If you had a UConn future 15-20-1, how would you suggest people hedge that? Should they hedge that? I know it's always tricky, and people ask us that stuff all the time, and it's not that easy, because it's, you know, how much did you bet? How much do you need the money? What side do you like? There's a lot of moving parts. But that being said, what would your approach be with a UConn future?
Yeah, what you said there is right. Hedging is a personal matter, right? Because it's always about how much did you bet on it, and how much do you need the money? How much does that money matter to you? I'm lucky here because I've got futures on both sides. I got Michigan 20-1 and UConn 15 and 16-1. So I'm good with the result either way. Be slightly better for me if Michigan wins the game. But you know, I'm not going to, it's not a big deal to me either way. It's a winner, both big winner both ways. If I did not have Michigan and I had a UConn future, what would I do? I'd probably, man, the money line price is coming down a little bit. So I think you could, you know, you could, the let's say you bet $500 on your UConn future. You want to get that money back at minimum before the game, and probably a little bit more. Let's say you bet Michigan on the money line to win $1,000 pregame. And then, Will, you see if there any in-game live opportunities open up for you as well. You leave the door open to bet more live during the game. How are you going to play this? Because I know you've got UConn as well.
Been back and forth, and I mentioned the Indiana-Miami game where I'm getting flashbacks because it was the same thing with Miami. I was like, if I get to the title game, I'll be good. Maybe right. I'll lay 200 on the money line the other way, and I can just name my profit. And then Indiana blows the doors off Oregon, similar to how Michigan blew the doors off Arizona. Then it's like, I was okay to lay 200 on a hedge, minus 200. I don't really want to lay three and north of $3 on a hedge. At that point, it's like, man, I could just let it ride, or I could just do what you suggested. I think that's probably the best compromise. Wait and just play it out. Now, that opportunity never materialized in Miami, Indiana. Mm-hmm. It was never 7-0 or 10-3 Miami where I could lay a reasonable price on Indiana. And we know they fell 41 yards short. Hopefully, it's 12-4 UConn. It's 18-11. And that minus 290 or minus 300 right now is all of a sudden minus 150 or minus 160 or even better. And then you can pull the trigger. Now, you can never have a crystal ball with this. You can never always just time it right perfectly, even though we try to. But I think the live betting aspect is probably the best way to approach it.
Right, and the live betting aspect really didn't work out Saturday night in those games. Illinois, I took 6.5 with Illinois live, and I thought 6.5 was a great number. And they couldn't even hit a shot to get in the back door late. And I didn't have to play live with Arizona, Michigan, because you could see that blowout happening, and I just let it go. At that point, knowing that Michigan was going to win the game. I think you need to bet something pregame, though, to cover your initial bet, to cover some of the other futures you bet. You want to definitely turn a profit, so I think you want to bet something respectable on Michigan money line before the game tomorrow night, right?
Yep, certainly makes sense. And if you wanted to get cute, the problem is there's only a 1 or 2 day turnaround here. It's a quick turnaround. So I know Chris Massera, our buddy, the Boston Strangler, is good about this where, I got this future. I'm going to hedge by parlaying like the Yankees are playing the Marlins. I'll do a little Yankees in Michigan and find three or four things throughout the week that I like and attack it that way, which is a good approach if you can pick your spots. But with only a day in between, it's not as easy. Any final thoughts on this game and any thought here, college basketball, in terms of like who takes the North Carolina job and anything to wrap up the season?
No, it's been a pretty good college basketball betting season. I think we're all a little bit disappointed the games on Saturday night were not better, but we could have a great one on Monday night. As far as the North Carolina job, I've said I don't feel like that job is as attractive as it used to be. It's not the great job it used to be. But still, I would make Billy Donovan the number one choice, 1A. And I think watch out for this, Will. It's awful tough for Dusty May to leave Michigan if he wins the championship Monday night. I think Carolina is going to make a big, big push to try to get Dusty May. Win or lose on Monday night. Would you say it's tougher for him to leave Michigan if he wins the championship on Monday night?
That's a great question.
How do you walk away and go to another school? How do you win the championship and then walk away and go to another school? I think it's going to be a tough situation for him. But that's the guy I think you have to make the big push for if you don't get Billy Donovan.
Would you think about Mark Few? Would Few think about North Carolina and say, you know what, I'm probably not going to win at Gonzaga. This has probably run its course. We got to a title game a couple times. I maybe got 5-7 years left. Why isn't this the opportunity? This is the job where I finally leave Gonzaga. Would that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. Makes a lot of sense. I was talking about that with Tim Murray on the show a couple nights ago. I thought Mark Few's name should be surfacing in this because you start to go down the list. I don't like Ben McCollum at Iowa. I don't think he's a fit for North Carolina. I don't think T.J. Otzelberger is a fit for that job. I like Mark Few. I think if you have to go past Billy D and you can't get Dusty May, then Mark Few would be probably the next guy on the list. So I would think that makes a lot of sense if if that's how far down the list Carolina has to go. It's not bad, right? That's not a bad consolation prize if Mark Few ends up being your coach. And by the way, you and I talked about this and laughed about it Friday night. Props to Tommy Lloyd. What a great job he and his agent did getting him that contract before the Final Four, getting a big boost in pay for himself, his assistants, getting more money for the program so they can continue to buy players in the NIL. And also, to top it all off, he no longer has to report to his boss. He doesn't have to report to the athletic director. This guy got it all before he got blown out by Michigan.
Yeah, pretty good deal. Get a nice little raise, yeah. Get rid of your boss, and I'll see you next year. Yeah, what? Yeah. Two last ones quickly. One on baseball. Anything about a week or so into the season, anyone you feel differently about than you did before opening day? I know the Yankees are playing well. Orioles have struggled, but I'll give you the floor here. Anyone you feel a little bit differently? Anyone you feel like you may have misjudged?
No, I don't like to make overreactions in the first week of the season. I think from what I've seen, the San Francisco Giants are probably going to struggle a little bit more than some people thought. Let's see. I've got an over on the A's. I've got an under on the Nationals. I've got an over on the Royals. You know, so-so with those so far, no big deal. I think the Yankees are better than a lot of people thought. And there were still going to be some questions, you know, if you get injuries and things like that through the summer. But right now, this Yankees pitching staff looks pretty damn good. And I say that, and the Yankees had a rain delay today, and they just gave up a run in the first inning. But I think they're off to a great start, and especially if Cam Schlittler is a real deal, like you and I have talked about. This Yankees staff is set up for big-time success. I'm a lot more optimistic about the Yankees now that we see it from Schlittler and we see it from Max Fried and how dominant these guys can be. And you don't have Garrett Cole yet. You don't have Rodon yet. Still a couple questions for me about the offensive side of it, but they can fix that. And I would say for the first time in a while, I'm pretty optimistic about the Yankees' chances in a World Series. Because you got to get there with pitching, Will. It looks like they got the pitching.
About two or three guys for the Masters that you would recommend at current prices?
I'm going to tell you what. I watched LIV Golf. I don't watch a lot of it, but a couple weeks ago, John Rahm and Bryson DeChambeau were in a playoff. They were like 25 or 26 under. They were playing great golf, and DeChambeau won the playoff. Watch both of those guys at Augusta this week. And I have some futures parlays and some bets tied into Scottie Scheffler. So I've got him at anywhere from like 5-1 to 10-1. But you look beyond Scheffler, and that's kind of an insurance policy for me. I don't want to bet all these other guys, and then Scheffler wins. So I do have a decent amount riding on Scheffler. Watch Bryson DeChambeau and John Rahm, both around 11-1, 12-1 in that range. And I've got some long shots, too. I think I bet 7 or 8 players. I'm probably going to bet a few more. But last year, I lost on Justin Rose in a playoff. And I had him at 120-1. And that sucked, but I was able to hedge before the playoff, obviously, on Rory. I played Justin Rose again here at 60-1. And here's something to keep in mind, Will. He's got a great track record in the first round. In majors, in the first round at Augusta, look at Justin Rose as a first-round leader at Augusta next week as well.
Matt, appreciate the time, man. Always fun. VSiN primetime weekdays. Where else can we find you?
Friday nights, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, all over VSiN. Go to VSiN.com, at VSiN Live on Twitter. And right now you can find me watching UCLA destroy South Carolina in the championship game. And I'll be watching the Yankees. Hopefully they can sweep the Marlins.
All right, man. Thanks again, man. Appreciate it.
You bet, man. Thanks, Will.
All right, thanks to Matt Youmans. Rate, review, subscribe. We'll be back on Wednesday. We will have a national champion by then. See you guys Wednesday.